Welcome to the For Love and Money podcast, the show where business and social purpose meet to inspire a movement for positive change. Here's your host, Carolyn Butler Madden.
Welcome to the 50th episode of the For Love and Money podcast. Can you believe it? When we started this podcast, it was meant to be a limited 12 episode series, but I just loved the conversations that I was getting to have so much with some incredible people that I couldn't stop. And it seems to me that you do too, as our listeners keep coming back and growing. So today I'm really excited to introduce you to an organization that I love. They're one of our amazing impact partners. Rainforest Rescue is a not-for-profit organization who have been protecting and restoring rainforests since March 1999 by providing opportunities for individuals and businesses to protect rainforests forever. Their projects re-establish rainforests, and they do it through planting, maintenance, and restoration programs, as well as purchasing and protecting high conservation value rainforest and preserving its biodiversity. Their key client, if I can put it this way, is the majestic Daintree Rainforest. It's the forest they love, learn from, and invest most of their time to protect. So today I get to interview two amazing people, Rainforest Rescue CEO Brandon Barber and Partnerships Director Kristen Canning. It was a wonderful opportunity for me to chat to these two, and I hope it's also a wonderful opportunity for you to learn more from them about the Daintree and about their organization's efforts in collaboration with their partners to protect it forever. We talk a lot about love on this podcast. I hope you get to understand just why I love this little organization so much, and just maybe find a little place for them in your hearts too. Brandon and Kristen, welcome to the For Love and Money podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us here.
Oh, so happy to be here, Carolyn.
I'm so glad that you're both here. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while. So let's kick off with the first question, which is, I know you're a nonprofit organization, but you work with a lot of businesses. Is there a role for love in business? What do you guys reckon? Who wants to kick off?
Kristen, tell us.
Oh, I would say yes, yes, and yes again. I think more and more, Carolyn, we're seeing really genuine interest in having love as part of, I guess, you know, part of the business proposition. This whole idea that, you know, profit cannot exist without doing good, it's starting to really change. We have so many active Vision Match partnerships. We like to call them Vision Match because we feel like their vision in the business that they run is really aligned with the work that we do.
Oh, I love that.
Basically, whether it be a B Corp, Fair Trade, Gecko, or just a business that is trying so hard to do the right thing. And our favorite phrase is perfection is the enemy of progress. You know, if we can feel that a business that approaches us, they're trying to do the right thing, they're trying to be the change in the world, they are what we deem a Vision Match organization. And yes, you know, I spent a lot of my career working with businesses that had both love and making a profit. And I think it exists in its importance today more than ever.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks, Kristen.
You know, Kristen and I had a chance to check in with one of our partners, BioPack, recently, and Richard Fine, who founded the company and is their chief sustainability officer, after we did our presentation and let people know just how much they're supporting Rainforest Rescue's efforts. You know, Richard teared up talking about how when he started BioPack, it never in a million years occurred to him that he would be able to extend the impact of the organization through to organizations and the work of Rainforest Rescue. And there was a lot of love in that. And if you look at our vision statement, right, it's to protect rainforests forever, and you protect what you love. And, you know, it's why I come to work. You know, I feel incredibly grateful that I get to spend my days working to support, protect, restore nature, and connect people to it. And that, you know, that's meaningful. And when people say, you know, what's the meaning of life? You know, it's what you make it. And love is at the core of anybody's happy review of their life. So yeah, I absolutely believe that there's a place for love in business. I think the best businesses are run on love.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And, you know, it's interesting when you talk about Richard tearing up talking about it, because it's inspired by love, but it's that deep emotion, right? That you know, this matters, this means something, I'm contributing to something important. And that's the most powerful feeling in the world, isn't it?
Yeah,
absolutely. Isn't it? I mean, businesses can be such a huge proponent for change.
If anything, businesses are in the sweet spot for it. I mean, the whole world is oriented around, you know, capitalism and what's the return. So if you can get love into that equation, all the better, a better return, a better outcome.
That's right. And, you know, you look at the polls, the research, which shows, you know, the crazy disengagement of employees and the cynicism of consumers and, you know, and the sort of brands they're moving towards. And it's all around, we want to work for, we want to support businesses that are in it for the right reasons. You know,
and that genuine, I guess, desire by businesses, that, you know, it snowballs. You see one business doing a great thing and working with us and promoting it, and then you see another business doing it. Then you see the businesses actually, you know, leading the industry in the way that it does things differently and sustainably. And it's a beautiful love snowball effect.
Love snowball. What a visual.
Snowball of love.
You can just see the love hearts like flowing out of this enlarging snowball. So, guys, tell us about Rainforest Rescue. Who are you? Why do you exist? Brandon?
Sure. Rainforest Rescue, who are we? We are a growing organization on a mission to protect rainforests forever. And, you know, if you look around at the news of the world, you know, there's a lot of heavy stuff going on environmentally. You know, I read a report or an article in The Guardian referencing a report the other day about how Earth's vital signs have never been worse. You know, and we all know that the climate is changing. We all know that things are not safe anymore and that we're destabilizing things. So as an organization on a mission to protect rainforests forever, that's what we're completely focused on. And we do that. Originally, the organization was founded around buyback in the Daintree, because the Daintree rainforest, the world's most ancient rainforest, somewhere between 135 and 185 million years. Now, don't get me wrong, I love the Amazon. Did a lot of work there, amazing place. It's only 65 million. So go Daintree.
All the rainforest of the world.
And, you know, Daintree is Australia's most biodiverse rainforest. It's Australia's largest. It holds such tremendous biodiversity. It is a global treasure. And that's why it was named UNESCO World Heritage Site. Mm-hmm. And it actually abuts, integrates with, connects to another World Heritage Site you may have heard of, the Great Barrier Reef. It's the only place in the world where two World Heritage Sites connect. And they actually have a really beautiful relationship. It's synergistic. The rainforest provides clean, fresh water that flows out onto the reef. The reef produces chemicals that increase the amount of moisture in the atmosphere that drives rain over the Daintree. And it's just this perfect cycle.
Wow.
And, you know, what we're trying to do is increase the amount of Daintree that is protected. There was a mishap many, many years ago where a government decided that, yes, much of the Daintree will become a national park in Queensland, and we'll just sell off a bunch of it and do something really exciting that will push the economy. So a lot of the lower Daintree was subdivided. And after that government left, the new government...
When was this? When was this, Brandon?
Was it 1985?
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, Joe Bjelke-Petersen government. George Quaid was the big property developer in the day. So anyway, that shifted. New government said, okay, this should be protected. There was a buyback program, got a big chunk of it. Then there was another smaller buyback program, and that's it. And the rest was, oh, well, you know, build houses, build resorts, do whatever you need to do. So Rainforest Rescue stepped in And we started buying properties strategically, often creating wildlife corridors to create contiguous habitat, always connected to the national park or other protected areas. Say Rainforest Rescue has got 31 nature refuges out of the 43 properties that we own in the Daintree. So we extend corridors, we create corridors, we extend corridors, we extend the footprint of the national park when, say, one particular property comes for sale. It might not be connected to others, but it's connected to the national park. We'll buy it. Good example was lot 41 this year, and that brought over 18 hectares into the fold. This has been a great year for Rainforest Rescue in terms of our commitment to rescue. This year actually is our best, it's our personal best. We managed to rescue 5 properties this year. By the end of November, we will have rescued 5 properties for a total of over 27 hectares. And that feels really good coming into our 25th anniversary.
Yes. Can I stop you there? And just for people like me who can't get hectares in their head, how many square meters is that?
27,000. So you times by 10, 27.
Okay. Brilliant. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's a good year. And, you know, we wouldn't be able to do this if it weren't for the support of people who are coming to the fore who recognize that we can do something together for nature. I would hate to wait on we up to COP 27, COP 28, then there's the biodiversity COPs that are happening. There's just not a lot of action coming from the top. So action coming from the bottom has always been the way change happens. So we're stepping up our personal commitment to rescue. And we used to have a small nursery in the Daintree. We produced 12,000 trees a year. We were very proud of it. Great biodiverse tree set, ethical seed collection model. But the planet is burning and there is a lot of restoration that can be done up in the wet tropics. Apparently, Terrain Natural Resource Management identified 50,000 hectares in the Daintree region or the wet tropics region that can be restored. So we have our work cut out for us. We built a new nursery and it will ultimately produce 150,000 trees a year. I look forward to when that's not enough. In order to deliver those trees, we have an increasing on-the-ground restoration staff. So we now have 5 people in the nursery. We used to have 1 person 2 days a week. Now we have 5 people in the nursery. We have 4 people working on the ground, doing restoration and maintenance on land that we're restoring. And it's a very exciting time to see what we can produce in just a short period of time that is making a real difference. And if Rainforest Rescue can be an example for what other organizations can do, or we're just part of this global growing movement of literally millions of organizations that are trying to do something to make the world a better place, that's pretty good. And I guess in a very random, diverse nutshell, that's Rainforest Rescue.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks, Brandon. And you know, we were speaking earlier and you were talking about growing to meet the challenges and that you're just getting started. And when you look at the scale of the problem, so many people kind of just feel disempowered and turn away. And yet they're ignoring the amazing organizations like Rainforest Rescue and the amazing people that are part of that who are not giving up and are not burying their head in the sand and are going, no, we're going to give this a red hot go and there is work to be done. So get your boots on and let's get going. And I just love what you guys are doing. And I love that you make it so easy for people to create impact through you. Like you can start at the lowest level, one square meter. And who can say no to that?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. Interesting. I think it all just comes down to A, awareness, and B, love, right? If you love something, you'll protect it. If you're aware that something you love is in trouble, you'll do something to help it. And, you know, the world that we're in is very complex and high frequency. And, you know, it's hard for most people just to, you know, pick their head up and look around, let alone schedule time. You know, I had to schedule time to go be in nature. But, you know, it's through opportunities like coming here to talk with you and to speak to your audience about the truth of what's happening out there. And it's real and it's good and it's accessible. And we are growing because more people are becoming a part of what we're doing. So if people are excited about doing something for climate, doing something for nature, good. Come join us. We're doing more, and we get to do more as more people join us. And every single person, every single tiny donation, everything counts. Even people just paying attention and telling people about it.
Yeah.
Them feel a little bit better about what's going on in the world.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, one of the greatest threats too, Carolyn, is the lack of education about the need to protect the Dane Tree. So that's right. What Brandon says is absolutely true, whether it be financially supporting us or just getting to understand why it is so important to save it. That's a gift too.
Or come join us and plant some trees up in the Dane Tree. You can do that too.
Yeah, beautiful. And I remember a few years ago going to see a film by Patagonia, and they had a panel afterwards, and Bob Brown was on there, and Rick, I can't remember, he's one of the senior VPs at Patagonia. And he talked about how exactly what you're talking about, Brandon. He said, you know, to really care about things, to feel that love, you need to be there. You know, you need to get into nature. You need to immerse yourself in nature. And it's only then that you really see, you know, the beauty, the majesty, the incredibleness of what it is. And only then will you really feel that deep love that inspires you to get up and do something about it. And that's the point you've made. And I feel like we are all so busy that we don't make that time. And we're all guilty of it. But God, we need to. We need to, not just for our own mental health, but for the planet, for the Dane Tree, you know. I want to read out your mission. Okay, so your vision is to protect rainforests forever. Your mission, which I got from your website, rescue vulnerable rainforests by strategically buying properties, restore damaged and fragmented habitat through reforestation, conserve the biodiversity and cultural heritage of rainforest, and learn from the forest, sharing and raising awareness. Talk to me about that last bit. I love that.
Kristen, you want to talk about that?
Oh, gosh. I mean, it is an endless supply of knowledge, the Dane Tree. And I think there's so many different ways that we do learn from it. You know, our new nursery manager, Maureen, does not stop in terms of the appetite that she has for learning more and more about the species up in the Dane Tree, which are endemic, which work well as pioneer secondary species. You know, and Carolyn, across our different properties that we've rescued and then helped restore, you know, some may be riverine wetland, some may be not on wetland, so like ex-sugarcane, ex-agricultural. And so in every instance when we restore, you know, that means we need to look at the species that we plant. And it is just an amazing library of nature and its wonders, you know. We often say that there's such history up in the Dane Tree and, you know, since the time of dinosaurs, that there are plants and flora and fauna that exist up there that are found nowhere else on the planet, except maybe in fossil records. And I think part of us wanting to learn from the forest and then impart that to the rest of the world is really what we talked about before too. This, you know, lack of education is one of the greatest risks. So did you know that there are this many, you know, endemic species in the Dane Tree? And, you know, even educating about species such as the cassowary, who's, you know, once they eat a poisonous Idiospermina or a species in the Dane Tree, once it actually goes to the digestive tract and they poop it out, it's only then that other species can eat it. You know, it's these crazy, amazing stories that we are just constantly learning from, I guess. And Maureen at the new nursery, Brandon mentioned wanting to propagate or grow 150,000 seedlings a year. We want within a decade of operation to have grown 1 million trees. And that's a massive contribution, wow, not only back to the wet tropics, but to the whole globe. And within that, you know, and Maureen leading her team there is just constantly learning and constantly sharing that with education through local communities. We work with also, you know, the traditional owners, the Eastern Gugulangi, who work at our nurseries. And it is such a gift to have their knowledge about the species and the cultural importance and what it means to them. It's just endless, absolutely endless.
one of the coolest things that we have done in terms of learning from the region, from the forest, is probably when we took on restoring a wetland. And it's not wet all the year, but when it's wet, it is underwater. And there's a lot of water movement. It's a very challenging place to establish trees that are going to survive. And our land management team thought, well, these weeds are really strong. And if we plant in islands surrounded by weeds, it will give those trees, they'll have the benefit of the closeness that their roots bound together is going to help hold that soil. And then the weeds around it will add an extra buffer. Worked great. And after that, they get to mulch the weeds and use them as mulch. So from a practical point of view, we are learning from the forest. I did want to say, yes, the cassowary eats a particular kind of fruit, which is called the idiot fruit. And what Chris was talking about. Yeah, idiot fruit, because if you let your cows eat it, you're a bloody idiot. Kill your cows. But once the cassowary, which is like the only creature up there that can actually consume these seeds as food, it will then, as Kristen alluded, excrete that seed. And then other animals will pick that seed up and pass it on in other parts of the forest. So the only reason that tree is able to continue to exist, propagate, evolve, is because of the cassowary. Like, there are all these really interesting relationships in the dame tree. And there's so much we still don't know about it. And we're working with JCU more and more, James Cook University, to establish, well, for our part, we're really looking at more effective restoration. We're looking at restoration in different contexts, like, you know, an ex sugarcane field, ex cattle country, an ex airstrip, lots of gravel in the soil, as well as just straight up restoration. But we're also moving into this very interesting space where, you know, we had this commitment to create a new nursery so that we could produce more trees. This is the UN's decade of restoration. I don't know if everybody knows this. I hope so. I hope everybody wakes up in the morning and says, another day in the decade of restoration. What can we restore?
I didn't know that. Well,
there you go. So we've still got, I think, 7 or 8 years to like really capitalize.
Time to make up, right?
On the UN's like abysmal marketing, apparently. But there are so many different financial mechanisms, schemes, programs that are coming to the fore that are supportive of restoration. So our commitment with the new nursery and with increasing restoration capacity and with conservation partnerships, providing trees for partners in the region so that they can do restoration, is so that they can take advantage of these new schemes. Schemes like, everybody knows carbon, ACUs, plant trees, you can qualify for carbon, but not many people know that you can do carbon plus or carbon platinum, or, you know, things that add value to your restoration. It goes way beyond carbon. So, you know, what value is a rainforest? Well, it's biodiverse. You know, that in itself is part of the global evolutionary learning that has led to nature's incredible 4.6 billion years of intelligence. But you also get, you know, clean water, you get mycorrhizal networks, you get habitat for insects and bacteria. And it's just incredible when you go beyond just, say, a carbon planting, which can be a monoculture. And new schemes like cassowary credits are coming out. That's absolutely focused on what you call the co-benefits of restoration planting, all of those ecosystem services that nature brings to us that makes it possible for us to continue living so that we can go into business with love and do good things. And then you've also got programs. The government is just rolling out a nature credit scheme. That's part of the nature repair bill that's come through. And then we're looking at reef credits, which have been out for a while, but just starting, I think, to find their feet. And that's really when your restoration is focused on riverine or riparian waterway systems so that you're improving the quality of water going onto the reef. That's worth money. Like, just as carbon credits are worth money, cassowary credits will be worth money with biodiversity benefits. Reef credits are worth money. The nature credits that the government are rolling through be worth money. And we're actually working on a program through the Queensland state government called the Land Restoration Fund as a way to both learn how we can make restoration financially viable, which is good for nature and good for the organization, because anything we wind up making in the future that goes beyond our cost just gets rolled back into programs so we can do more. But it also adds co-benefits. So it started out as just carbon, wanting people to go plant trees. And in year two and now year three, the value of your carbon credits increases quite dramatically if you qualify for different elements that are extra benefits. So in our case, it's environmental, it's reef health, it's community engagement, it's working with traditional owners. And I'm very excited about that space. I'm very excited about the emerging credit schemes like cash work credits, because that's going to show people that it's actually smart to use that unused agricultural land and restore it. It's smart to maybe consider going into growing a rainforest and just enjoying that and making money just by protecting it. And that's a big part of what we're really excited about, supporting that.
That's brilliant. And so that it's like compounding benefits from what you're talking about. There's so much benefit to so many different things. And I love this idea that just seems to be coming through, which is of the forest as a teacher. Mm-hmm. You know, that's beautiful, but clearly, you know, we live in a time where we desperately need innovation. We need to find new ways to tackle the challenges we've got, and learning from the forest, learning from, you know, nature is just, yeah, it just feels like the right thing to do, considering the predicament we've got ourselves into.
Yeah, and I also just want to flag how important and how fortunate we are to be partnered with Jabal Bina Aboriginal Corporation, representing the Eastern Gugu Yalanji. And, you know, the more we work with traditional owners, and the more that, you know, we share with one another, the more we learn, and they have so much to share with us. And we have so much to learn from them. And, you know, we're looking at doing a lot more in the next year with Jabal Bina than we've done in the past. And, you know, it's been a lot of investment, a lot of time, a lot of energy, but working with, you know, a first people who traditionally, culturally are not, you know, part of the world of, you know, Monday.com and schedules and spreadsheets. And to be fair, Jabal Bina is an incredibly effective organization, and they just took on ownership of 5 national parks, including the Daintree. So they're on a very significant growth path, and it's really cool to be part of that. In fact, we're granting our old nursery, which we refurbished, still will happily do 12,000 trees a year. We're granting that back to the Eastern Gugu Yalanji through Jabal Bina to help support their tourism and, you know, cultural programs.
Yeah, wow. Amazing.
Enjoying the podcast? If you're looking for more inspiration, head to our website, thecauseeffect.com.au, for more resources on how you can start using your business as a force for good. Or buy the For Love and Money book. Every copy sold allows us to protect 1 square metre of rainforest. Help us save 10,000 square metres by 2025.
I've had many conversations with Kristen, you know, because of my relationship with Rainforest Rescue, and hearing from you now, Brandon, and talking to Kristen, it feels so personal. Like, you guys are so emotionally invested in this. So I wanted to invite you to just give a bit of your back, each of you, to give your backstory as to how you became connected with Rainforest Rescue.
Oh gosh. It's been a journey, and a great journey. I was originally born in the States. I ended up in Australia and eventually doing university here. And I studied a Bachelor of Communications Advertising. I tried to switch halfway through because I was deeply disturbed at the power of advertising and consumerism. And then when I was unable to, it was obviously meant to be, because I started looking more at, and we talk about, you know, business being a powerful proponent for change. Anything that holds a lot of influence can have a lot of positive change. So I started, you know, looking at how marketing can be used for a positive purpose, advertising, media. And upon leaving university with my advertising communications degree, I ended up finding one of Australia's first, what they called, sustainable advertising agencies. And I think their vision was to reinvent advertising for a sustainable society. So again, it was just this notion of using this powerful influence for positive. And we worked with a lot of not-for-profit clients and a lot of, you know, purpose-led businesses. And since then, I then dabbled across different not-for-profits and then overseas in corporate cause or in, you know, matching up a business with a not-for-profit and doing a beautiful marketing and fundraising campaign around that. And I ended up, I guess, having a little bit of a break when I had my daughter, and I still stayed in touch with a friend from the whole space who was at the time a CFO at Rainforest Rescue, and he brought me on 10 years ago, and I've never looked back since. I find it very hard to think that I've ever worked anywhere where I feel so powerfully about what, in essence, we're selling and we're asking businesses to invest in. I just, you know, put everything on the table in terms of, if you fund us, you are getting such an unbelievable investment, return on investment. You know, what you're able to help us achieve is just huge. And I don't know that I could ever feel better, to be honest. I love working with business to create change.
And it shows. Is it like you come across as a family? Is it that sort of feeling?
Yeah, it is, I think. And that sounds so corny.
No, it doesn't.
But, you know, we've really got a fabulous group of people who are very good at what they do and very committed. And you've got to have both, I think. You've got to have people that really believe in the mission and really believe in the product, because it is a product at the end of the day, what we do and the services that we provide for the Daintree in the world. And I don't think we have any employee member from up in the Daintree to, you know, down in Byron and Brizzy where I am too, that doesn't wholeheartedly believe in everything that we do every day.
Beautiful. Brandon, tell us your story.
Well, that's, I just love that. And, you know, we've really grown so much in the last 5 years. The culture that has emerged is really reflective of, you know, being on a mission with people with shared values who care about each other. You know, it feels really good. It feels really good to work here. I'm grateful every day. So my backstory, I thought I was going to be a psychotherapist like my dad, and was in uni and was just falling asleep in the dorms, right? There's my roommate, Ted, over there. He's going to sleep. It's probably 1 o'clock in the morning or four, who knows? And all of a sudden, just before I dropped off to sleep, I sat up in bed. I swear to God, this is what happened. I sat up in bed and I said out loud, "The planet, I gotta help the planet." I am not kidding. And then Ted, my roommate, "Shut up, go to sleep." And the next day I changed my major to environmental studies. I was at UC Santa Cruz at the time. This was a million years ago, back when the environmental studies program was new. And yeah, I haven't looked back ever since. I wound up working, my first sort of real job out of uni would have been with Greenpeace. And I worked for Greenpeace International on the Rainbow Warrior and the MV Greenpeace. That was like becoming a NASA astronaut for someone I think who'd gone to school in aeronautical engineering. And I wound up ultimately running the Greenpeace office in Victoria for a couple of years. That was great times. That was like almost 30 years ago. I remember one of our campaigns was coal power equals climate chaos. And we're really trying to shift Australia's coal power.
30 years ago,
man. Anyway, it's getting better, right? We're making a difference. And I made Greenpeace's first website. It was really easy back then. That is not saying a lot. I just happened to be the first guy to say, "Oh, we should get one of these." And that led me into a sabbatical that lasted for 5-6 years, where I learned skills in marketing, brand psychology, project management, design, and multimedia. And my goal was to come back to the environmental movement and take those skills and apply them. And I wound up getting a call from a friend who at the time was running Rainforest Action Network in San Francisco, who said, "Hey, what are you doing?" "Oh, well, you know, this and that." He said, "Well, we're looking for a development director." And I said, "What's that?" And he said, "Oh, it's a great job. You get to go to parties and hang out with wealthy people and get them to write big checks." And I said, "Well, that sounds like fun and positive, but I'm real busy." And he said, "Look, I'll call you back in a year. I can cover stuff when the other person." I'm like, "Really?" And he called me back in a year. And the next thing you know, I'm working for Rainforest Action Network. And that was a tremendous period of growth for me in understanding how to engage groups of people and individuals around doing good in the world for the environment. And then I did some time with Amazon Watch, working on advocacy programs for Indigenous peoples in the Amazon, primarily Ecuador and Peru, basically creating barriers between them and the oil companies. And then did a lot of time just consulting for different groups, and ultimately saw this job back in Australia, and it was time to come home and do some real good in Australia for the environment. And that was 5 years ago. And this has been the most amazing 5 years of my life.
Yeah, wow.
When it comes to, you know, engaging with an organization and together, you know, cranking up the old volume and seeing what we can do, how loud we can be, how fast we can go, while at the same time being very careful about overspeed growth, being very smart financially. And I mean that sincerely, because we have such a great team now. I think a real sign of the organization's maturity is we just recently were able to both justify, and please God, can we have hire a general manager focused on finance and operations. And that has been, you know, an extra layer now of risk mitigation and financial nous and making sure we're doing a good job and bringing everybody else up to do their jobs. So, you know, I'm at the very least, I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be.
I have no doubt. And I have no doubt that's true for both of you. It's good. It's good to hear some of that backstory. So I want to, Kristen, I'm going to ask you to come in now and talk about partnerships. So, you know, to our listeners as individuals, but also as some of them are business leaders, some of them are business influencers, you know, they're people who are invested in this idea of business as a force for good, you know, purpose, higher purpose, driving profit. There are lots of tree planting organizations around. There are lots of environmental organizations. You know, it's a huge problem, and there are many, many solutions. Why Rainforest Rescue? What is the unique value proposition of Rainforest Rescue? Why should they take action, you know, after listening to this podcast?
Very good question. I think from my point of view, and Brandon will have, you know, probably a much better response to this. We are small and mighty. We are so lean, and we are seriously kicking it in terms of the achievements. You know, we've planted over 330,000 trees, and we've saved, as we mentioned before, over 2 million square meters of unprotected rainforest. And for us, I think it is such a genuine mission every day to work towards across all of the organization to protect the unprotected Daintree rainforest. And also, as Brandon mentioned, the Daintree lowland rainforest is largely unprotected. So, you know, we pull our socks up and we just get on with it, and we raise funds to actually protect that rainforest. And then when it is protected, we put a nature refuge on it with the Queensland government, so it can never be touched. I think probably why Rainforest Rescue is also in our track record. You know, it's going to be our 25th anniversary next year. We've been doing this for a long time. We've had some of the world's best, you know, experts involved in the creation of our methodologies, our tree planting, our species propagation, our, you know, our reports on where we buy land and the connectivity and the conservation importance of the land. I mean, it is quite in depth what we do in the background, I guess, in terms of, you know, what we have done and having our sights on the future, the people that we bring along on the ride. You know, Dr. Alex Cheeseman from James Cook University, it's been an absolute honor that he has accepted our invitation to be an advisor with us now, which means that he helps us work across the methodology across all our sites. And he's worked over in the UK and in Australia for years on basically studying soil and tree planting. And Brandon, again, would be able to speak more to that too. But we are really good at what we do. We're lean and we output a serious amount of achievements. And I think the lovely thing about the Business Partnerships Program, and indeed, as you mentioned, Carolyn, any individuals that give to us, is we can really quantify that. We can make it really impactful. You know, we've got businesses that come to us and say, oh, we can only give $5 a month. And, oh, is it okay if we use your logo? And, oh, it's not that much. And that's nonsense. We love every business partner as much as the other. The fact that even a small business that is not making a lot want to give us even a dollar is huge. And, you know, if we're able to prove to them that we are, you know, a great investment, which I know we will, then we will grow together. You know, we have no doubt of that. And I think really there's an inbuilt trust when we start a partnership that we really do respect each other's, I guess, vision and track record. So I guess I would say that's a long-winded way to answer the question, but it's basically, we're really good at what we do. And I hope that we're good about bringing partners along with us and making them feel really amazing about what they help us contribute to.
Well, I can tell you from my experience, yes, 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 to all of that. So thank you. Brandon, do you want to add to that?
You know, I think I just wanted to clarify, we're really good at what we do because we've just been attracting excellent people, you know, and that to a large extent, it's like, obviously we're doing the right things. We're attracting the right people. I like to say we hire unicorns. You know, we managed to attract unicorns. They're rare. They're really hard to find. And, you know, you're really lucky when you get one. And, you know, we've got a whole staff of great, unique, really smart, really committed people. As far as business partnerships goes, you know, if it weren't for business partnerships, we would be a much lesser organization. We would not have made it as far as we have come. We would not have achieved as much as we've done by far. I'd say cut it in half, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe even less. You know, without that kind of support and growing support, like we wouldn't have the confidence to take on like the great risk that is 150,000 tree a year nursery. You know, that's a small endeavor. You know, if you'd told me the odds at the beginning, I'd have been like, oh, maybe not. But just as, you know, it's like we were talking earlier, you know, the bad news and gloom, don't pay attention to that stuff. Don't let the bad news get to you. Don't tell me the odds. And, you know, we are able to do more than anybody thought we would do. And we really wouldn't be here if it weren't for our business partners. I mean, Kristen can give you the stats, but I just know we have great business partners, like that story I told you about Richard at the BioPack presentation, you know, and every time I get to meet with, talk to, communicate with our business partners, it's just positive. They feel so good to be a part of this great work. And we feel so good to be a part of this great work. You know, literally you could just devolve into hugging.
Yes.
But Helen, if I may, I wanted to kind of outline one of the coolest ways. So BioPack, we've mentioned Richard Fine and Gary Smith over there and the whole team. I mean, talk about innovating and leading and sustainably shaking up an industry. I mean, they are awesome.
They're a packaging company, aren't they?
Correct. A compostable packaging company. And they are a diamond partner. But the really cool thing is that while they're our biggest partner, they actually have created a campaign called 1% Profits to Rainforest Rescue, which is what they invest in us. And, you know, I sat across the table. We always talk about this, Rich and I always get teary also. Over 10 years ago, so in 2012, so 11 years ago, when I first started Rainforest Rescue, and I said, oh, I wondered if you'd help us save one hectare up in the Daintree. And before I even finished the sentence, it was, yeah, sure. And I was, wow, I didn't even have to sell it, you know. Rich is just, we just knew, I guess, that we had that vision match. And since then, you know, the creation of the 1% Profits for Rainforest Rescue, they're now our biggest partner. And I asked BioPack and Rich if I could take that 1% Profits for Rainforest Rescue and actually have that as an offering for our business partners. And it is the fastest growing program within Rainforest Rescue because it's the little businesses that give $5 a month, 1% of their profit, so that's sustainable for them as they grow. And you know what? We've had some partners go from, you know, canopy level to $1,000 up into platinum level with this same beautiful, sustainable growth of 1% profits to Rainforest Rescue. So I guess for me, that's a beautiful story because that is a real love and a heart story to say, I will give 1% profits. And look, we're growing together. And that's all we want. And Brandon and I, you know, we've definitely had the door knocked on by businesses that we politely declined going into partnership with. And there are many factors that have gone into that research. Are they genuine? Is it greenwashing? But you know what? At the end of the day, it's a trust and it's an energy. And I just think it's the business partnerships program is just a really beautiful way to invest back into what we do. And I would love for any listeners to, you know, talk to us more about what they could do, or if we could work together, it'd be awesome.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I found really attractive that instantly I was attracted. So I came across Rainforest Rescue through B1G1, who are our impact facilitator, if you like. And, you know, I came through B1G1, but people can come direct to Rainforest Rescue, or they can find Rainforest Rescue through B1G1. But for me, it's the Daintree, right? It's that it feels personal and nourishing. And, you know, there's something about it and Australian and local. And, you know, it's just, I think that for you talk about vision match partners, but there is so much to love about it. And for an organization who partner or collaborate with you, let me put it in marketing terms, that equity, you know, there is so much value in the Daintree itself. And I think that's gold. I think it's absolute gold. And I wanted to share how some of the ways I support Rainforest Rescue, and it started really small. All right. So it started with my book, For Love and Money. And every book I sell, we protect one square meter of rainforest. And then as I got to know your organization better, it was like, okay, how else can I do this? And so started looking at other ways. And of course, and I've mentioned this to you, I always say to my clients, set a huge goal that scares the bejesus out of you. And so I realized we had to set a huge goal that scared the pants off me. And I did this a couple of years ago, or last year, I think early last year, of 10,000 square meters by the end of 2025, which, you know, for a small micro business like mine is huge.
Huge.
Huge. We've got a long way to go. But the reason I'm sharing this is I want to share why this is such an opportunity for businesses. It forces you to think differently. So I'm sitting here looking at, you know, 10,000 square meters. I think we're at 800 or 900 at the moment. And I'm like, how the hell are we going to get there? So I've started thinking, okay, speaking. I do keynote speaking, paid keynote speaking. And, you know, a big chunk of what I get paid. So, you know, we're looking at paid speaking events, 50 to 70 square meters, depending on the fee, to Rainforest Rescue. Pro bono speaking events. I do a limited number of pro bono events. And I suddenly thought, okay, these people can't afford my speaking fee, my usual speaking fee. But I've started, when I accept it, saying, would you be prepared to donate $350 or $500? It'll all go to Rainforest Rescue. And people say yes.
Wow.
So, you know, I've only just started doing this, and I've only had a couple that it's come through, but it's like normally that would just be zero. And, you know, it's still, people can afford a few hundred dollars, and that goes to Rainforest Rescue. So, you know, there's, and I'm still thinking, and I'm starting to think now with my keynotes, how might I engage my audience? Maybe I, you know, for my book that I offer for sale, maybe I offer it to the audience for whatever they want to pay for it. And all of those proceeds will go to Rainforest Rescue.
That's amazing.
I don't know. I need to figure out new ways of doing it, but, you know, the pressure's on. This is the whole point, is you start to think about doing things differently and you start to innovate within your business, and good things happen when you innovate within your business. So, yeah.
That's just so wonderful. I mean, and it's, you start to look at different areas, and like you say, you start to see people and businesses are actually responsive to that, you know, and that is creating change in everything, you know, you can do and you can touch. So that's just absolutely brilliant. And we are so grateful to have you on as, you know, one of our early business partners, really. And it's creating such amazing change up in the Daintree.
That's really inspiring, because, you know, setting those those big audacious goals, like we have to.
Yeah, we do.
We have to. Business as usual is not, and there is no time to waste. So it is absolutely the time to innovate. It is absolutely the time to scare yourself with targets that you just have no idea how you're going to make. But, you know, I'm not crazy about the metaphor, but the whole, you know, moon race back in the day and the moon shot, you know, that only was possible because people were like, hey, we really have to do this. Let's pull out all the stops. And more people are becoming aware that we really have to take nature repair seriously, and we really have to take the biodiversity and the climate crisis seriously. So how do we think different? How do we do different? Well, there's some pretty good goals out there now, and it'll be really interesting to see how businesses and governments around the world actually make good on how they're going to achieve them.
Yeah.
Because now is the time. It's a very exciting time to be alive. The opportunities that we are presented with right now are unprecedented. So it's a great time to be a leader, be a hero, channel your inner white knight and go crazy, make it happen. Together, it adds up. And I believe we're going to make it. And it's because of people like you and organizations like Rainforest Rescue, and the businesses that partner with us, and the individual people that support our work, and the people who come to the tree plantings. It's a very wonderful time to be here.
I love your optimism, both of you. And I just want to pick up, you know, this is a time for leadership. I talk a lot about capital L leadership. And it's important for people to understand that you do not need a C in front of your title, your job title, to be a leader. We're seeing leaders come from all sorts of different places. And, you know, this is the opportunity. You might be a leader of a team. Start there, you know, and ask your team, how could we support this organization? Doesn't just have to be, you know, we'll take money from profits and donate it. What else can we do? You know, let's get creative, because in that creativity, that's where we connect to innovation, and, you know, it generates new opportunities for the business as well. I'm conscious of time, and we're going to have to close this out, but to take us there, can you share, this is your pitch, right, to our listeners, but tell us about a project, you know, a project that you've got at the moment that could entice people.
Well,
could entice people more than they're already enticed.
They're already enticed.
Yeah, we just happen to have a great opportunity for you. As I was saying earlier, at the end of this calendar year, we're doing an appeal. It's a 3.9 hectare, almost 4 hectare property. That's 10 acres for those of you who do acres. And KP, how many square meters is 3.9 hectares?
39,000 square meters.
Woo! So, this is a beautiful, beautiful opportunity to protect our first, literally adjacent to the reach, to the reef property. It's on the beach in Cape Tribulation. It was going to be somebody's dream home location. Their financing fell through. Fortunately, we leapt in, and I just can't believe someone would build a house there. Like it was almost impenetrable. So biodiverse, multiple ecotones. Absolutely beautiful, beautiful example of Daintree littoral rainforest as it meets the sea. And if you go to our website, there's a button on the front page. I think it says protect lot one now. I won't even tell you exactly what it says, but it's rainforestrescue.org.au. And we still have a long way to go. I'm confident we'll make it, and I'm confident we'll continue to keep making it, because this year has been a really great example of what's possible. And I know that people are starting to really look for those opportunities to make a difference more than ever. So lot one, Cape Tribulation Road, 10 acres of absolutely beautiful rainforest where it meets the sea. And that will take us up to 27 hectares for this year, our best year ever. So go check out rainforestrescue.org.au, and it's the top button on the main window on the home screen. Can't miss it.
Wonderful. We'll include links in the show notes. That's superb. Thank you so much. both of you for coming on. This episode will air actually very soon. So end of October, early November, we are coming up to Christmas. So if you're thinking about Christmas gifts as well.
Oh, we have great Christmas gifts. We have e-cards. People can protect rainforests. People can plant trees. It makes a great
t-shirts.
Gift. T-shirts. Yeah, and we have beautiful t-shirts there.
I love it. Oh, love that.
Yeah, they're great. So yeah, do check us out for your Christmas giving opportunities. They're really great. There's something for everybody. Whatever you want to contribute, there's something for you.
Wonderful. Brandon, Kristen, thank you so much for joining us. Yeah, everybody go to rainforest.org. I'll include the link in the show notes.
thank you
so
Carolyn,
much, Carolyn.
Honestly,
this was
for
great.
Everything you're doing. You're just
amazing. Thank you.
And thank you everyone for listening.
Yeah, thanks everybody.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the For Love and Money podcast. If you'd like to take a deeper dive into the purpose movement, visit us at thecauseeffect.com.au. And remember, doing good is good for business. So if you're not doing good, then what are you doing?